You're listening to the official Travel Through History podcast. We're the producers. I'm Joe.
And I'm John. If you haven't heard our story yet, go back to the first episode. We kind of give you a little breakdown of how this all started.
In the meantime, the voice of the show, Jillian, will take you to our next destination.
Take it away, Jillian.
There's gold in Demdar Hills on today's episode of Travel Through History. We're headed to the Treasure Valley to find ourselves a real gem of a town in Boise, Idaho. And don't you dare say this town is just about spuds. Our first endeavor in the Gem State is to gawk at the splendor of the Idaho State Capitol building, unmistakably modeled after the U.S. Capitol in D.C., but chock full of that frontier spirit. Did you know that Boise has one of the biggest communities of Basques in the U.S.? No, not Bass. Basques. These guys. We'll dance the night away on Boise's Basque block and find out how they wound up in Idaho at the Basque Museum and Cultural Center. After that, off we go into the wild blue yonder at the Warhawk Museum, just outside of town in Nampa. It's got a hangar full of real-life, flyable World War II fighter planes you can't miss. Then, we get thrown in the slammer at the Old Idaho State Penitentiary, a co-ed frontier prison that's no stranger to the hangman's noose. Watch your step in the always creepy drop room. So, whether you say potato or potato, we're taming the wild frontier on today's episode of Travel Through History, Boise edition.
Control program confirmed.
Boise has a classic American frontier story to tell. You know, the usuals. Fur trapping, native fighting, gold in Demdar Hills, etc. So much so, actually, the area is known as the Treasure Valley, and Idaho is the Gem State. Evidence shows human inhabitants have lived in Idaho for thousands of years, and tribes like the Shoshone and Nez Perce trace their lineage there. To get to the Idaho we know and love today, it took old Abe Lincoln to carve it from surrounding Oregon and Washington territories.
We're surrounded by Oregon, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, and Canada borders us as well. Hi, I'm Carrie Westergaard, the Executive Director of the Boise Convention and Visitors Bureau in Boise, Idaho. Since Boise's located in South Central Idaho, we're a two-hour drive to Sun Valley, Idaho. There's a 45-minute drive to world-class whitewater rafting, and then about a 40-minute drive to the wine country, which is very similar to Northern California slopes. It's really beautiful country here.
The word Boise is what's called a shibboleth, meaning it's the type of word where you can tell if someone is from around these parts by how they say it.
Boise. I say Boise.
Boise is often mispronounced. It's Boise, like icy, but we pronounce it Boise instead of Boise.
Well, I don't know why, but the natives say Boise.
So there's no Z. So like when you hear them chant it at the football games, they all go Boise. Boise.
Now that that's settled, I'm getting hungry. What do we have to eat around here? Don't say it. Don't say it.
Of course, everybody thinks potatoes.
If you come to Idaho in general, you probably have to have some form of a potato just to say you did it.
Well, we're really known for the potato because Simplot, who is really famous for the McDonald's French fry, is from Idaho and from Boise.
We are what geology created. The moisture that we have available and the type of soil that we have, it's just really conducive to growing the best potatoes in the world. So we are the potato state.
But Boise is not just about potatoes. The food culture here has grown into its own.
We have two farmers markets that happen throughout the whole entire summer, and we have restaurants that will go and handpick select products to serve that night.
Boise has now become an area that strives for farm to fork. And so there are a lot of great restaurants.
You know, we have such a wide variety of ethnic food here. It's amazing the food that's available here, whether it's, you know, Japanese or Chinese or Indian.
So we're not just about potatoes. We have wonderful fresh produce and agriculture here.
The people here love the outdoors, and why wouldn't they? So when you're there, get on a bike and hit the Greenbelt.
The Boise Greenbelt is a bike path or walking, running path along the Boise River right in town here. It is used for rollerblading, walking, biking, and it runs for over 20 miles.
You know, it's just, it's a very outdoor life. It truly is hiking and canoeing and fishing and camping.
What's great about Boise is that it's so close to so many outdoor recreational activities. We have the foothills for hiking, you have skiing, you know, an hour away. You have great rivers for rafting.
You could be outdoors with 234 days of sunshine a year.
It's great.
Okay, you've sold us. Boise's not a one-horse town anymore. It's a vibrant, growing community of potato-loving outdoor enthusiasts. Final thoughts about present-day Boise before we dig into the history?
I really love everything about the city of Boise.
I think it's the best place that anyone could ever live in this country. I probably shouldn't say that because then we'll be overflowed with new people.
You know, I assume all towns think they're great because of their local qualities, but people here really appreciate it.
The reason we say it's time to experience Boise for yourself is because we hear people say, I've always wanted to go to Boise, I should try, I should come. Well, now's the time. Come and experience all that we have to offer. It's a perfect time to come.
Distinct seasons, distinct food, and a distinct culture lives in Boise as well. Boise has the highest concentration of Basques in the country. Weird, right? Let's head to the Basque Block to learn about Basque culture and how this tiny European ethnicity ended up in big numbers in the Idaho Territory.
We are in the gallery of the Basque Museum and Cultural Center in downtown Boise, Idaho. Hi, my name is Annie Gavica, and I'm the executive director of the Basque Museum and Cultural Center. Basques are a cultural group located between Spain and France. Part of the country or the area is in Spain and part in France.
Unique is the right word. This small region, about the size of Maryland, is shoehorned inside of Spain and France, but mysteriously has its own distinct culture and language called Euskera.
The Basque language, or Euskera, is very similar if you were to see it written down. They use the Roman alphabet, just like we do in English. And there's lots of K's involved, which makes things plural. So instead of seeing an S on the end of the word, it'll have a K at the end. To say, hello, my name is Annie, I would say, Kaixo, ni Annie nice. I work at the Basque Museum would be Ni Euskal Museoan lan egindot. Yeah, just the whole language in general is quite different.
The Basques came to Idaho because of these guys, or should I say, use guys.
The reason there are so many Basques in Boise, Idaho is because of the large immigration group that came in the early 1900s to work as sheep herders. There were a lot of sheep and a very large sheep industry in this area, Idaho, Nevada, Oregon, and parts of California as well. And so they were coming over here to get jobs. They didn't necessarily come over to be sheep herders specifically, but that was the job that they could do without learning English right away.
You've probably heard of at least one Basque invention. It's called highlay. Don't blink or you'll catch a pelota with your face.
A lot of the Basque influences in American culture are associated with the sports that they played in the Basque country and then brought over to the United States. One of the main ones is highlay that they play mostly on the East Coast, Florida, and in Massachusetts, Connecticut area. And then a version of highlay called handball or pelota or pala. Instead of using a large basket, they would use either their bare hands or a wooden paddle.
If you head downtown, there's no doubt you'll find yourself basking in the things to do on the Basque Block.
Historically, there were many Basque boarding houses on this block, and they kind of spread outwards. But now they have two Basque restaurants, a Basque market, a cultural center, and then the Basque Museum as well.
The Basques are a festive, fun-loving group, and while we were taping, we were invited into a party as family. So to truly understand the kinds of people that make up Boise, come here and hang with Annie from the block.
I would invite anyone to come to the Basque Museum and Cultural Center when you visit Boise. Not only is it a very unique part of Boise, but it gives a pretty broad idea and story of the Basques in the Basque Country. So it's an interesting part to be able to experience and see that unique culture in such a small town like Boise.
More TTH Boise after the break.
Hey everybody, it's Joe and John, the producers of Travel Through History here. One thing I wanted to mention to you guys was the only way that we're able to even make programming like this is through a charity, and our charity is called the Watch and Learn Foundation, and you can visit it by going to watchandlearn.org.
What Joe really means is that we have no idea how to sell the show, and although we've tried in the last 4 years, we haven't been successful at it. We can shoot, write, produce, edit. What else do we do?
Pretty much everything.
But we can't sell.
So if you're
actually somebody listening that can help us sell the show, please call us. Send us an email. Anything. Because we really want to keep doing more of these, and we actually like to pay our bills. But in the meantime, you can go to watchandlearn.org and make a donation.
That's right. That's www.watchandlearn.org, and donate and keep shows like Travel Through History and other educational shows on the air.
If you're visiting Boise, the state capital of Idaho, and you love history and architecture, I'm sure I don't have to convince you to head to our next attraction. The majestic Idaho State Capitol building would be the jewel of any town, and it's certainly a gem here. Let's take a tour of Boise's most famous building with a former Idaho State Senator.
Hi, I'm Robert Geddes. I'm the director of the State Department of Administration in Boise, Idaho. We're standing in the State Senate chambers in the State Capitol. This building was started in 1905. At that point in time, it housed all of state government for the entire state of Idaho. Now what happens in this building is the legislature resides here, the governor, the attorney general, and the state treasurer.
The Capitol stands at 208 feet tall and is the fifth largest structure in the state. It's modeled after some famous architectural relics like St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, but it's obvious this building was meant to look like the U.S. Capitol, decked out in four types of marble and completed for a measly $2 million. I'd say they got their money's worth.
I think everyone looked at the U.S. Capitol as kind of the symbol of freedom and the symbol of our country. Idaho is the 43rd state. And so what the forefathers did in Idaho was they actually engaged the public and asked that a contest be administered. That contest allowed anyone who had a design in mind to draw that up and submit it.
Architect Charles Tourtellet got the nod, and along with his German partner Charles Hummel, they set out to maximize the amount of natural light the structure used, inserting his own political statement about the enlightenment of man.
When the Capitol was started, there was not electricity in Idaho. And so the designers of the Capitol used to their advantage windows and the ability to bring outside light to the inside of the Capitol. And they did that for two reasons. Number one, they needed light to function. But the designers actually felt that to shine light on government was a good thing.
Don't crick your neck. Your best spot for a photo op is definitely straight up in the spectacularly lit rotunda.
The rotunda is a gathering place for all kinds of people when they come and visit the Capitol. They have a lot of open space there. You can see from the first floor clear to the top of the dome of the Capitol.
The Capitol building is recently renovated and it looks spectacular. One thing that stood out was how open and inviting it is. Just like the people it represents, and touring it is totally free.
The conscious decision was made that we wanted this to remain open to the public. And so as guests and visitors come into the building, they are not required to pass through a metal detector. We have on-site security to monitor and make sure that things are kept maintained and controlled. But we really try to make this as open and as accessible as we possibly can.
As I mentioned earlier, Lincoln was instrumental in creating the Idaho Territory, and there's a special place for him in the Capitol.
We still look at Lincoln as a real Idaho hero. Our largest room in the Capitol is the Lincoln Auditorium.
My recommendation is to spend a few hours on the Capitol grounds, get some great shots, and reflect on the pioneer spirit that built this building in state number 43.
You know, I like to visit other states, and one thing that I do because of my interest in government and politics, I like to visit their state capitals. I always look at their state capital as a reflection of kind of who the people were when that capital was built, what their economy was like, and what their real interests and desires were. they went to great extent to make this a really special place for Idahoans to look to their government as a symbol of freedom and liberty.
Now we go from capitals to capital punishment. Let's wander the incredibly creepy halls of Idaho's most infamous jailhouse, the Old Idaho State Penitentiary.
This is known as Two House, which was one of five cell blocks that housed inmates during its 100-year history. Hi, my name is Megan Anderson. I'm the interpretive specialist here at the Old Idaho Penitentiary. The penitentiary was open from 1872 to 1973. It began as a territorial prison and housed the state of Idaho's criminals. Everything from forgers to murderers, kids, men, and women.
Men and women. This was a co-ed facility, and the most famous female occupant had trouble keeping her multiple husbands alive.
The most infamous female prisoner was Lyda Southard. She had several names because of her five husbands. She's more commonly known as Lady Bluebeard. She would kill her husbands by poisoning them with arsenic. And she got away with it several times. She was imprisoned after her fourth husband died. She actually escaped from the penitentiary here, was gone for about 15 months, had married a new husband before they recaptured her and brought her back.
By far the creepiest place at the pen is in Five House, and it's called the Drop Room. As you may have guessed, this is where 10 convicted murderers met their maker. Some people think controversy surrounding one man's hanging has left the place with a bit of a specter.
What's interesting about our gallows is that our last execution, they only hung one man in there. And when he hung, his neck didn't snap, so he had to suffocate. He ended up strangling to death, and it took him about 15 minutes to die. So that is also what gives our site a little bit of lore, I guess. People think it's haunted for that reason. They think because it took him so long to die that his soul still lives in that building. That is not something that I've ever experienced.
The prison site is a 4-acre rectangle surrounded by a 17-foot sandstone wall. There are four guard towers, one on each of the corners. Rifled guards manned the towers with specific instructions.
We have what's known as a dead zone. It's about a 10-foot dirt pathway that's within the inside of the walls. If an inmate went into that dead zone, the guards in the walls would fire one warning shot with their rifle. And at that point, if the inmate did not exit the dead zone, the guard then had permission to shoot to kill.
A little known fact about the penitentiary is that it also houses the J.C. Earl weapons collection. It's not related to the prison, but it's still a really cool look at weaponry from the Bronze Age up to modern times.
The old pen is great. I think you get, like I said, you have state history, you have local history. You get these individual stories, you see these cool buildings. You get to touch it, feel it, and just be in it. And that's what makes our site, I think, very interesting.
More Travel Through History Boise after the break.
Hey, it's John and Joe, the producers of Travel Through History. The only way we can affordably produce these shows is with an invitation from our tourism board partners. They help show us around and get us where we need to be to tell the story.
Boise is one of those sleeper cities in that most people on the East Coast don't even think about going there, but we were super surprised by how cool it is. Visit in the spring or the summer for perfect weather, get outdoors, go hiking, go biking on the Greenbelt, visit the Idaho State Capitol, it's amazing. And visit boise.org to plan your trip.
Visit their site to learn more about the city's attractions and start planning a trip. Back to the show.
Just a few miles outside of Boise, in the small town of Nampa, lies a discreet-looking hangar so chock full of aviation goodies that when we heard about it, we just had to make the trip. But it's not just the planes that will amaze you, it's also the stories archived within these walls.
Hi, my name is Sue Paul. I am the co-founder and executive director of the Warhawk Air Museum in Nampa, Idaho. We are actually standing in the Cold War era of the Warhawk Air Museum. We're standing actually in front of the F-104, which was our fighter plane during the Vietnam conflict.
The Warhawk Museum is two hangars full of memorabilia, too large to do justice in this segment.
right behind us is the F-104, and in front of that is the MiG-21, and they were in conflict against each other. They fought against each other during the Vietnam War. To the side of them is the F-86 Sabre jet, which was our jet during the Korean conflict, and right next to it is the MiG-17, which was the Russian MiG that flew in conflict with our plane during that same war.
The War Hawk Museum's collection spans the aeronautical ages, from the World War I triplanes like the Red Baron flew, to the Boise B, a World War III P-51 Mustang, to a Vietnam-era Huey helicopter. It's got something for everyone, but that's just the surface layer.
What makes this museum so unique and makes it so special and so emotional are the thousands and thousands and thousands, literally, of collections that have been donated. Personal histories, personal collections, personal stories that really tell the story of our American citizens during wartime in our country.
Lining the walls and cabinets are window boxes, each with a glimpse into the lives of a veteran, complete with their personally donated memorabilia.
They're all in cabinets, a very hands-on museum. We invite people to feel like they're really a part of what they're seeing. And so, yeah, it ends up being a very personal experience to come through here. We have got places to sit and read forever. We have binders on every single cabinet that explains who the person is, their history, and the importance of their life to our country.
So if you're a history buff, take the trip to the War Hawk Museum. Get up close and personal with these beautiful warbirds and learn about the people who served this country from the air.
I think that every American needs to come through this museum. This is where their histories are. So you need to come here and learn about that and know that you can take your time, come and plan to stay for several hours, and truly leave here feeling very differently about your own country and certainly about our veterans.
We say goodbye to Boise after the break.
Hey everybody, it's Joe and John, the producers of Travel Through History here. One thing I wanted to mention to you guys was the only way that we're able to even make programming like this is through a charity. And our charity is called the Watch and Learn Foundation, and you can visit it by going to watchandlearn.org.
What Joe really means is that we have no idea how to sell the show. And although we've tried in the last 4 years, we haven't been successful at it. We can shoot, write, produce, edit. What else do we do?
Pretty much everything.
Pretty much everything.
Everything that...
But we can't sell.
Yeah.
So if you're actually somebody listening that can help us sell the show, please call us, send us an email, anything, because we really want to keep doing more of these, and we'd actually like to pay our bills. But in the meantime, you can go to watchandlearn.org and make a donation.
That's right. That's www.watchandlearn.org, and donate and keep shows like Travel Through History and other educational shows on the air.
So did you learn something new about our 43rd state today? We hope we inspired you to take a trip to Boise to see that it's no longer a remote outpost on the way to the Pacific, but instead an important historical piece in America's frontier story. Now, please pass the butter and salt. Join us again next week as we travel through history.
Thanks for listening to Travel Through History. Don't forget to visit the website to learn more about the places we visited and some quick history.
That's www.travelthroughhistory.tv.